All right, it is the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back. Masters Saturday. How about this? Look at me, Michael. Look at the gear. Special delivery, homie.
Your address. When you get people your address, I mean, it's really nice that you're able to. I didn't have your home address, but I'm a man of my word. I knew we were going to send it to you, so there you go.
Look at this gear. Thank you.
All that thing you called fiction was not fiction. As a novelist that you are, now, I will say this. I'm watching the Masters a little bit here in my office, and it looks like these greens have really firmed up a little bit. I think the moisture has dried it out. It's going to be interesting to see what happens as this day goes on. It looks challenging right now.
Yeah, it does, and we'll go ahead and set it up. If I told you Rose right now was 6.5 to 1, do you like that price? I'll give you the exact number. Thomas Gable just sent over the numbers here. Here's what you got. Rose is 6.5 to 1. He's 7 under. He leads by a stroke here. Harman on the board right now, 14 to 1. This is at the Borgata. You've got Zalatoris, your boy, at 12 to 1. Spieth's 4 to 1, and then Thomas is 5 to 1. If I told you right now you had to pick one, as far as value, where are you going?
You know, value, I think Harman at 12 to 1 is a good value. And I think Cameron Champ at 33 to 1 is a hell of a value. Tony Finau at 12 to 1, I think, is a good value. At some point, he's going to break through the door. So I want someone more than just 4 to 1, I think, because I think this is a tournament that anybody can win. I mean, Cameron Champ, any of these guys, I mean, I could see Morikawa coming from 28 to 1. He's only minus 2. He's not that far back, especially if we get a day to where, you know, it doesn't extend to 11 under today. If Rose doesn't, you know, again, I think this is another number we need to predict here for our listening audiences. What do we think the number closes today? Is it 9?
Yeah, I think our buddy West said that he thought the tournament would end right around 11 under. Remember, DJ 5 months ago, 20 under, but that's an anomaly. That was a course record. I think we finish up for the tournament 10 or 10, maybe 11. How about you?
Yeah, I think so. I thought it was going to be 9. And I think today's weather is going to be really indicative. If it stays dry through most of the day and these guys are struggling to really keep – I just saw Mickelson had a hard time, you know, keeping the ball on the
green. Well, it's windy.
And it's windy, right. Add wind and firm conditions, and there's no way, you know, that everybody's going to shoot. There's no 65s out there today, which I don't think. Maybe there will be. I don't know. But it doesn't seem the conditions will promote a 65 today based on the pressure and of the moment.
Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures right now. There's a flag in the trees in the background there. It is very windy. And remember, winds don't just affect, you know, the drives in your iron play. Also affects you on the green. So I think it's going to be tough today. It looks like, again, I use the word ominous, but it does look like it's going to rain. 60% plus chance to rain today, and the winds are going to be picking up throughout the day. So I think the conditions are going to get tougher is what I'm trying to tell you as the day progresses. So that means the leaders who are going to be teeing off later, they're going to be in a tough spot.
I think so, and that's why I think the 7, if you post 7, if Justin Rose shoots a 72 and he's 7 going into Sunday, is that what you want? I think that might be 7 or 8 might be the number today.
I agree with you on Cameron Champ, who's just 3 strokes back, 33 to 1 on the board right now. We'll come back with that.
God, he bombs it. He bombs
kills
it. Go ahead.
He
yeah, I'm
kills
sorry.
The ball. Coming back with that here on the Lombardi Line. Here's an action update.
This is Brent Musburger, and here is your VSiN Action Update. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
Defending Masters champion Dustin Johnson missed the cut, the 11th defending champion to miss out on the weekend action at Augusta National. Rory McIlroy also among the big names to miss the cut. Justin Rose at 7 under par is the leader after 36 holes. He is 4 to 1 along with Jordan Spieth entering the third round of play. Justin Thomas is 5 to 1. Will Zalatoris is 12 to 1. Tony Finau and Brian Harman both at 14 to 1. Leader after the third round odds, Justin Rose 3 to 1. Jordan Spieth 5-1, Will Zalatoris +650, Brian Harman +750. Start your free trial today to VSiN at vsin.com/subscribe. You'll get 24/7 video access, our daily subscriber only best bets email with the best bets from hosts and guests, and you'll also get point spread weekly. VSiN.com/subscribe. With your action update, I'm Mike Sena.
Get the latest VSiN odds at VSIN.com. And remember, cashing tickets is what it's all about.
The Masters, as we welcome you back here on the Lombardi Line. I'm Patrick Maher. A sincere thank you, Michael. Thank you very much for the gear. We're going to have we're going to have the gear up available at the VSiN store soon. And this is a very, I just told Ann and JJ, I don't have to worry about dressing up for work anymore. I got my, this now is my uniform.
I don't, me too. I like the uniform. I like to take the decision out of the
get. Thank you.
I like, you know, I'll wear a daily coach and Lombardi line. That's it. You know, and so, well, that's what we're going to do.
No, I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you very much. Now, we mentioned
You're
moving
welcome.
Day, 36 holes to go, 53 players chasing Justin Rose. What I thought Rose, again, he's 6-1 on the board. What I thought was impressive is he saw it in round one and then he saw it in round two. Remember, through seven in his first 18, he was 3 over, and then he just went on a tear, an all-time great tear at Augusta National. And then yesterday, Michael, through seven, he was 2 over, and he kind of did the same thing. Now, three birdies through the rest of the way. Excuse me, yesterday he was 3 over, then three birds the rest of the way, finish up 72 even par. But just the resolve. He's 40 years old. He's been around the block. Rose shouldn't be just dismissed here.
No, I mean, look, he's played well, and I thought the mental toughness at the end of his round, the second nine that he just demonstrated, and he was able to fight through it. You know, that the moment of these tournaments that really wear on you is the fact that basically you get so caught up in the, you know, what lies before me. You know, amen corner. I've got to get through 4 and 5. I got to get through 4, 5, and 6. It's the hardest holes on the course.
Right.
Then I've got to play 9, 10, 11, and 12, you know, and that's the hard holes on the course. So, you know, and he started out poorly, and then all of a sudden he bounced back. So I think he's got the mental toughness to can he hold up under the immense pressure? What I do see out here on the course is, you know, there's certain guys, they are making, you know, Mickelson opened up at, you know, he was 2. Now they've kind of, there is some birdies out there, so they're actually playing pretty well.
I think
right
this
now.
I think this is the easiest part of the day, though, Michael. I think it's going to get tougher as
I do
the day
too.
Progresses.
I don't think we can learn enough from this to really help the better going forward. I think you got to play your instincts on this. And like I said, if you have a ticket for JT, Justin Thomas, or Finau, Then think about offsetting your ticket with someone else. Think about picking somebody that you feel has the, you know, the situation. What drives me crazy is, like, I like, we don't get to see all the golfers all the time. Like, Patrick Reed went disappearing on the coverage yesterday. He just went MLI. Now, he wasn't playing well, but we lost him, and then you don't know what he's doing. So, as a bettor, you're trying to kind of gather information watching these guys play, and you're hopeful that you can learn something from it. But we'll see if we'll get that. I mean, like, Patrick Reed, I don't know what his number is to come back. I mean, he made a hell of a shot at 18 to save par there. I think he's +1 on the day. He was +1 going into it. So, would he be, you know, what is his odds? I think +1. If it's not a difficult, if it's a difficult day today, then he has a chance to shoot a decent score to keep himself in it. If not, you know, if they all shooting 67, it's going to be hard to stay with him.
I'm looking at Morikawa, and I just want your advice on this one, because I think he's going to go low today. Again, maybe the best iron player on course. I think Morikawa, who is sitting, what, 5 back, Michael, 2 under for the tournament, 5 back a Rose. I think he's going to go low today. Par here is 72. His number set at 71, 110 juice up and down. I'm going to go under Morikawa, 71 on his round. You okay with that?
Yeah, I am. I like that
69
play.
Yesterday.
I mean, He's 28-1. I think it's somebody from this part. I mean, we keep thinking it's going to be the leader. You know, it's the number one seeds all the time, and yet we know there's somebody that on Saturday and Sunday can handle the pressure and can handle the course and has the right game for the course based on the conditions and based on how they set the course up on the weather. I think that's critical. And Morikawa's iron play is so good. I mean, I just thought, to me, Champ, the way Cameron Champ just plays at an unbelievable level in terms of how he drives the ball at 33-1. Why would I take a chance at that one?
Yep,
Why wouldn't I?
Yep. And then Champ's, he's a stud. He bombs the ball. And mention Morikawa, who's already got a major under his belt. Okay, it's going to be great. The next 36 are going to be great, and we're going to be here for you on the Lombardi Line in VSiN. And remember, go to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. You can sign up for free and get all of our golf coverage as it stands. Okay, let's transition. Let's get into a couple of these draft props and continue with the information. Now, let's back up a little bit because you kind of set this market. Now, Michael made you a ton of cash last year on the draft, but you did set the market on the Mac Jones deal. Do you believe that there is a rift, and I'll call it a rift, but a divide within the front office, Shanahan, who's going to make the call, as you mentioned, and Lynch, is there a disagreement on who to take at three right now with the 49ers brass?
I think they want to do their due diligence. Look, I think part of the problem why there has been such a mishit on quarterbacks in the National Football League is there's too many people involved. I think anytime you're making a monumental decision of really, really critical importance to your franchise or to your organization, if you're listening to this at home and you're running a business, you have too many people involved. Look, and I know that goes against the theory of we have to be inclusive and make everybody feel a part of it. But here's the difference. There's very few experts on quarterbacks. There's very few experts on quarterbacks. And so because of that, what you have is more opinions. You don't have expert opinions. And so when you collect a bunch of area scouts and a bunch of personnel directors and you put them in a room, they may have opinion on the player. They're not experts' opinion because they can't tell you the footwork and the mechanics needed to play within the offense. It's a challenging thing to do unless you're there every day doing it. Now, some coaches who even coach the quarterback, they can't do it. So the reason there's such a bad disconnect between drafting quarterbacks and finding quarterbacks is understanding that, and then also understanding the work habits. I think there's been as many mistakes made on drafting quarterbacks and over-evaluating character than there has been on taking a chance on a guy who maybe didn't have the highest character. There's actually been more mistakes made on that. E.J. Manuel was a wonderful kid, worked his tail off. He just wasn't good enough. But all the things he did off the field at Florida State, all the mechanics, all those things, when you watched him and Buffalo took him in the first round, he said, that guy's not a good enough player. But yet he had all the intangibles. And sometimes those intangibles lead you to think you can make the guy a better player. And then sometimes you look at intangibles on the player and say, well, he's just not what we want for the position. And maybe that wasn't right either. Maybe you didn't do a good job evaluating that. So for me, the market is simply this. I think San Francisco has one guy in their organization, and it's not John Lynch. All due respect to John. He's a Hall of Fame player. But John Lynch ain't making this decision. The Shanahans, plural, are making the decision. Kyle and Mike. And really, Kyle's going to make it because Kyle knows what he wants. He wants to scout inside out. And I think that's what ultimately is going to be. And I think it's Mac Jones. And you could say, well, you traded way too much to get up to Mac Jones. Well, I think based on what's going on in the draft, I think there is three players that teams liked. I think it was Lawrence, Wilson, Jones. I think there's a lot of intrigue about Justin Fields. I think people see the talent in Justin Fields. They see the arm. They see him as being someone that they're going to have to really work through to get his footwork, to do all the things that they need to do within the offense. Do I think he has a chance to be a good player? No doubt. But once again, when I'm being critical of Justin Fields, I'm not being critical that he's not a good player. I'm being critical of what do you have to grade this player in order to trade a boatload of picks. See, when the Jets the Jets are sitting there, they're saying what they're saying to you is when they pick Zach Wilson, is they're saying Zach Wilson's going to be a top five player at his position. That's what they're saying.
Right.
They're saying he's going to be a top five quarterback in the league. If they feel that way and they believe that, God bless, they did the right thing. If they doubted that, if he's not that, they should have taken the tackle from you from Oregon because he will be a top five player at his position. He will be. And that's where we lose sight of it because we as fans – and I'm a fan too. We get caught up into the minutia of he's a first rounder or he's going in the first round. We talk more about where they go than how they play. And that leads me back to Ja'Marr Chase, okay?
Yeah, please.
Ja'Marr Chase is a top five player at his position. He is a true X receiver. He's not a Z. He's not an F. He's going to line up at X, and he's going to run routes, and he's going to dominate, and he's going to be able to overcome any obstacle that he wants to overcome in terms of whatever he has to learn, whatever his test score. I don't care about any of that. He's a one-positional player, which is not a negative. It's a positive. But he can be, and he can be a top five at his position. He's going to require double coverage against certain level of competition, and he's going to be able to beat all levels of competition. Like, you're not going to feel like if they put Jalen Ramsey over there on him, he can't make a play. See, that's how you have to grade players. Like, if I put a top five corner over this guy, can he win? Because why would I pick him that early if he can't? This is the hardest thing for fans to understand. There is a distinct separation between what's good and great.
If I'm a better, do I feel comfortable laying 350? That's the number you have to lay, that Ja'Marr Chase will be the first wide receiver drafted. There's no way it's Smith, right? 4-1?
I don't see it that way, Patrick. Look, I've told this to people in the league. The one thing that I think you can never lose sight of, and it's undefeated, size and speed. Size and speed is undefeated. The draft is about size and speed. We want to take the fastest guys and the biggest guys. And because the draft is an economic value, it's equated to money. Fans don't see this, right? Everything in the draft is about money. It's about money. It's how much does this player cost me? What is he worth? Can he match the dollar amount? We picked Barkavius Mingo when I was in Cleveland in 2013. And, you know, we thought mistakenly that he could be a top five pass rusher in the league. We picked him 7. We were wrong on that evaluation. The verbiage didn't match the pick. We should have traded the pick down. It was a horrendous draft. D. Milner. It was really nobody very good in that job. Sheldon Richardson. The mistake that I made was thinking that Mingo could be an elite rusher with power. He never played it with enough power. I thought he could get bigger and play with power. When you start to think something, I think he can do, I think he can, you're going to make a mistake. And that's what we have to learn from. And the only way you learn from it is to make them. And that's why Belichick trades down so much. That's why he trades down so much, because there's too much gray area in what he's looking at. The guy's not worthy of the money, so I've got to trade down.
If you hadn't taken Mingo, what was your next play? Was it the trade down?
We should have traded down. We could have traded down. I should have picked Trufant.
Gosh, that's fascinating.
We should have traded down and picked Desmond Trufant. But, again, we had too many people in the room. And we had one guy in the room that didn't like Trufant. So that made a real problem. And so now all of a sudden your options start to dwindle. The draft is everybody wants to be involved in the room, right? Everybody wants to be. The draft, why do you think the Patriots room is so small? Because the more there's only certain level of people that understand the true pro game. They don't understand the pro game. Not the scouts are on the road all week long. They don't understand the pro game. You know, to the scout, they're scouting players. They don't understand plays and players. And so there's a huge divide. And because of this, we want to make everybody feel inclusive, which is what John Lynch is doing, and Kyle Shanahan is the head of they're going to fly back, and they're going to spend time with Justin Fields, and they're going to look him over, you know? But they already know what they're doing. It's just really, it's theatrics to make the organization feel like they've done their due diligence.
Because as a draft, I mean, the draft provides juice, right? As a human being, there's a lot going on there. Let me ask you,
this is one of the problems with the Raiders. John Gruden doesn't understand this whole conversation. He doesn't understand that. That's when you take Cleveland Farrell at the fifth pick in the draft, you don't have a grading system. You don't have a grading system. Right? When I go out to pregame warmups in the NFL and I watch teams, I can tell whether they have a grading system or they don't, because they have a short guy, they have a fat guy, they have a tall guy, they have a skinny guy. When you have a grading system, you have order within your framework of how you're building your team. The draft is about elimination. It's never about finding talent. It's about eliminating talent. You want to eliminate. The FBI doesn't go look for serial killers and open up the phone book. They have a profile of what they're looking for. It's the same thing. That's how the draft is. You have a profile for what you want from every position, and you work from that profile. And so that's why you eliminate. When I can eliminate a guy, that's the greatest thing ever. I eliminate him. He's done. He doesn't fit. He's not. Doesn't mean he's not a good player. Everybody takes it so personally. They take it so personally because they don't understand it. They just don't understand it because they haven't been educated on it. Because all we've educated the fans on is that guy's a first rounder. That guy's a first, he's a second rounder. Oh, it's too early to take that guy there. No one tells you why it's too early to take him. They just tell you it's too early.
Fascinating stuff, Michael. Great job. Take a look at the board there. We've got a couple of minutes here, and I want to total wide receivers taken in the first round. 4.5 is the number. So let's go ahead and throw up the board you've got there. Odds to be the first, and we can just take a look. Chase is going to get taken.
Let's talk about the receiver.
Go ahead. Run through it.
All right, so we know Chase. We know Smith from Alabama is going to go. Waddle's going to go, too. Right now, here's the fourth receiver. No one's going to talk about it because, you know, he didn't play this year, is Bateman. Bateman's a really good player from Minnesota. He's really good. Now, Tony from Florida, he's got some issues that people are going to have to really get comfortable with him as a human, right? And that doesn't mean it's not a knock. You just, you know, what you do in your life and how you behave in your life, you've got to make sure people are comfortable with who you are as a human. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means the team that drafts him have to get comfortable with him. And once again, the value of what he is has to match where you want to take that risk. Remember, this is all risk reward. The draft is a course in risk management. That's what it is. You're risking money to figure out what you're getting. So I do think there'll be four in the first round. I think there's a really good chance there'll be five. Now, let's go. Rondale Moore, I don't see it because he's too small. He's a second-round pick. Elijah Moore from Ole Miss, he'll be a really good player in the second round. Terrence Marshall, those guys, I think there'll be a run of those receivers at the top of the second round because that's the value. Four-year contract, you'll get a potential starter, and they'll be able to come in and play.
Tremendous. Remember, it's 4.5 as far as the total on wide receivers taken in the first round. If you go over, you got to get to 5. Michael just told you, could be 5 taken in the first round. Over is favored at -175. You got to lay a price on the over. Under, coming back the other way, +140. That is tremendous. You can't get that information anywhere else when it comes to the draft. Go inside a war room. That was tremendous stuff with Michael Lombardi. We continue on a Saturday. It's moving day at Augusta. Jeff Siegel, he does a great job at Oaklawn Park in the sixth race today. Jeff likes number 5, Edgeway, at 9-5 on the morning line. Golden Gate Fields, seventh race. He likes the number 4, Cheater's Waltz, at 9-2 on the morning line. You can bet these races and others on the First Bet app. It's tremendous. Sign up for the First Bet app and use the promo code Vegas100 to get $100 in matching bonus on your first deposit. Visit vsin.com/horses. For details, that's vsin.com/horses. Okay, we welcome you back. I saw Mickelson. Did you see that? He's going low. He's 2 under through like 4 so far to start off his round. 1 over for the tournament, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what we can learn from it. I mean, they're out there playing now, so it's like, can we take this and use it as our information is moving forward to bet and help us understand what's going to happen as we move forward with the next round?
Yep.
You know, so I think that's it. You know, now I know he just had a punch out, so he went far left. But, I think that's it, is if it's dry enough, can they continue to go at the pins and play it this way and see what they can do?
I've got a question for you. Again, you can have disagreements about the value of a running back, but the number set right now at 1.5 total running backs taken in the first round. There's no chance 2 running backs go in the first round, right? Najee Harris is right now odds to be the first running back taken. He's your favorite at -125, and Etienne's +160, your second betting favorite.
So the reason you want a first-round pick partly is because of the unique talent, but also you get the fifth year of the contract, right? Do you really want a fifth year on a running back? You know, typically running backs don't get through the second contract. You'd rather buy an economic value, Aaron Jones in the fifth round out of UTEP. Harris is a top talent. There's no denying this. He can play on all downs in every formation. It no longer matters what down it is in football. It matters what's the personnel grouping. personnel groupings dictate everything. And Harris can play in 11 personnel, which is one back, one tight end. He can play in 10 personnel, which is one back, no tight end. And he can play in 21 personnel, which is two backs, one tight end. So he can play in all the formations. Same with ATN. And the fact is, the only reason you're going to draft a back in the top 20 is because he becomes a weapon in the passing game. Now, I think Harris can make plays in the passing game, so can ATN. I'm just not seeing enough of them to say they're weapons in the passing game like Aaron Jones. And that's why they slide down the board. Once again, it's the economic value, right? We're spending money for this player. What are we getting out of him? What are we getting? How many plays do we get out of him on his normal play? I think Harris will be a great pro. I think he'll be a great pro. You got to get comfortable with the kid. You got to get comfortable with all the things. Does he know what he's doing? I think he's smart enough. Can he handle it all? No doubt. You get comfortable, he's going to go. But do you really want the fifth year? Why do teams trade back into the first round? They want the fifth year. That's why quarterbacks go in the bottom of the first. That's why we saw it last year with Love. He went in the bottom of the first. Would you trade into the first round to get us a running back? I wouldn't, because I don't really want the fifth year. I think there'll be other players. Then you say, well, you can't get the back. Okay, the draft is not about falling in love. You know, the draft isn't you can't fall in love. The draft is I've got to have options. So if I don't trade back in the first and I give up an asset, I could pick, if I don't get ATN, maybe I pick Jenkins, the tackle from Oklahoma State. Or maybe I pick, you know, I pick Javonte Williams from North Carolina. I have them graded the same. I don't care. So I'm going to get one of those players if I have them graded the same level and the verbiage match. So that's why you don't do it, Patrick. And
again, if you want to bet under 1.5 running backs taken, you have to lay a price at minus 200. Am I hearing, or you tell me, clear this up, Sewell, obviously, Penei Sewell, the stud from Oregon, the tackle. I have a hard time thinking he gets past Cincinnati. But how about the Northwestern tackle? Is he being rated higher? Is Slater being graded higher right now than Sewell, or is that just some smoke screens I'm hearing?
I think he's in the same category. I think Darius Shaw, the kid Virginia Tech tackle, is in that same group. I think Tucker, the guard from USC, is in that same conversation. Once again, you won't hear these names because they're not sexy or popular, because we'd rather talk about, you know, St. Brown from USC or Nico Collins from Michigan or some receiver like that. Because that's all people want to talk about is the receivers. But these guys are really good, and I think that that's what's going to go in the draft. Where's Darren Shaw going to go? I think right now it looks like there'll be at least four offensive linemen in the first round. Could be more. Jenkins from Oklahoma State could go earlier. You know, I don't know that, but I think he might. So four seems light. It seems really light.
And you like Sewell, right? Big,
love
strong.
Sewell. Look, I love Sewell. Look, look. Here's what I love. I love when I could say, put the guy on the pro board, and he's going to be in the Pro Bowl. That's what I love. That's what I love. I love to be able to say that. And when I could say that, then you're not talking me into trading away from him. Put him on the pro board and put him in the Pro Bowl.
Go get
you. When you could say that, yeah, you've got yourself a hell of a player.
Go get you a Jonathan Ogden and call it a day.
There you go.
How about
and
that?
And no one's going to second guess you.
It's not going to be sexy. It'll win some games. Our buddy Thomas Gable, behind the book at the Borgata next here on the Lombardi Line. Okay, it's spring. Of course, we've got you covered as the betting action doesn't get much better than this. VSiN experts are covering the Masters, early baseball trends, NHL, NBA playoff races, and more. We give you the tools to cash more tickets. You see it all right there in front of you. I'm telling you all right now, get over there and get started for free. You won't regret it. It's vsin.com/subscribe, vsin.com/subscribe.
Patrick, how about the newsletter? I just got the newsletter from my man Bill A.D., he's got me betting the Marlins today. I mean, come on, Bill. You put my name on the Marlins? I'm a little worried about that. Like, I just was having a conversation.
I think a lot of people are worried about it if there's a suggestion from you on a baseball game.
I'm just saying, I was trying to get Josh Applebaum to handicap it. And then in the newsletter, I see Michael Lombardi likes the Marlins today. I'm God.
No.
Too much pressure. I just went in the water on 12. I just skimmed it right into the water.
Hey, change that.
I just Rory McIlroyed it. I just Rory McIlroyed it over in the right forest. over there. Hey, did you see that yesterday? He shanked it into the right forest. They sent three guys in, and within about 2 seconds later, three guys came back out. We're not going in there. Like, you get your ball. We're not going in there.
You are shot out of a cannon. By the way, he doesn't like the Marlins today. Michael Lombardi loves the Marlins today.
Yeah, that's right.
Welcome in Thomas Gable.
Now I have to go home and watch the Marlins game. Of all the things I want to do,
Thomas Gable.
Billy's got me cleaning the garage today. I got to go watch Big Don Mattingly. Big Don Mattingly fan all of a sudden. I can't clean the garage. I got to go do that. I got to go watch the Marlins game. That'll go over big in the house.
T-G-Z.
Yeah, go ahead. We got my man Gable in the house.
T-G-Z, yeah. Tom Gable, racing sportsbook director over at the Borgata. Hi, Thomas. How you doing?
Doing well. I'm glad to see Michael getting into baseball betting. That's great. Love it.
Do you like the Marlins today, TG? You like the Marlins?
Not against DeGrom, that's for sure.
How's early season baseball betting going for you over at the Borgata?
It's been going pretty well. We've actually made some decent money so far, and all the unders coming through. We'll see if the bettors catch on to that. But, yeah, it's been going well in the early season.
How about the golf? You got the updated odds going into round three here at Augusta. Your shortest is, I'm guessing, Spieth, right? 4-1 on the board?
Yeah, Spieth 4-1. I mean, just take a look at the – if you take a look at the leaderboard, forget about the odds for a second. Just look at the leaderboard, and you go down and say, who really has a chance here? Now, keep in mind, it's Saturday. It is moving day. So, you know, you typically will see someone shoot – go very low, whether that's somebody further down the page or at the top to kind of separate themselves. But when you look at the top names there, you have Spieth, who obviously was a winner here and is in really good form. He won last week. He's been certainly on an upswing in the last month or so with his game. So no surprise to see Spieth up there at 5-under, 2 off the lead. But he is the shortest favorite right now. And then you have JT there at 4-under, plus 500. You look at Justin Rose. Rose is somebody, though, who obviously had a fantastic first round, came back a little bit yesterday, did manage to shoot even par on the day. But at plus 650, I mean, Rose has had success here. He hasn't won. He's obviously had a long career. But he's had a second, a tied second here. You know, quite a few years away from his victory at Marion in the U.S. Open. I think I was there that year, 2013, when he won the U.S. Open. But I think it's 650. Rose is somebody who has the pedigree. He is a major champion, somebody to look at. When you get, though, further down this list, somebody like Morikawa, 33-1, all it's going to take for Morikawa today is, you know, if he shoots 5-under or something like that, 67, goes low to 66, he's right there. So at getting him at 33-1 on moving day, I think there's something to look at with that.
Totally agree.
I agree, Thomas. And I think what you're saying to the listener is that you got to go pedigree here. Like, you know, it's a great story for Zalatoris and Harmon, but you just don't feel like they're going to be able to stand this test of the pressure of the moment to handle that.
Correct. Absolutely. As Zalatoris, I know our buddy Brian Hamilton's rooting for him, but I just don't know if he hasn't won on tour, but for somebody to come in and get their first career victory ever in the Masters, I mean, it's never been done since 79, Fuzzy Zeller.
Yep.
So tough road for those guys. Leishman, somebody who, again, is kind of, not surprising to see him up at the top of the leaderboard at the Masters. He has played well here in the past, but he's kind of streaky. He goes back and forth. Finau, certainly somebody who to keep an eye on, and Matsuyama, again, somebody who plays consistently well here. 20-1, you can still get him. He's only 3 off the lead, and you can get him at 20-1. I think that's another name you need to look at.
But come on, TG, we need Thomas and Spieth in my veins that final pairing tomorrow. Let's get it. That's the one that everybody wants. You know this.
Oh, for sure. That would be a tremendous matchup to see, one for the ages, especially with Spieth playing as well as he has lately. I mean, listen, when he kind of went through that swoon there for a while and kind of seemed lost, there's a lot of people rooting for him to get back into form, and now he's here. So He's going to be tough to beat, but I mean, JT's also playing really well too.
Yep. Nailed it. Seven NBA, 10 NHL, 15 in Major League Baseball today. So it's going to be a busy day at the Borgata, huh?
It is. And the Arkansas Derby, Patrick. I don't know if you're going to be wagering on that.
We forgot about that.
That's the one I didn't want to bring it up because I'll go home and immediately I get into my TVG app. But yes, and my ExpressBet app. Of course, Michael Lombardi, I'll be all over that.
Really? Who do you like today, Patrick?
Arkansas Derby? Text me. Not saying it on the air.
He doesn't give out these plays for free, Michael. I mean, come on.
I forgot that Vegas, Patrick.
Hey, how about, by the way, Michael, how about a rare flex from Thomas Gable where he just kind of dropped in there? By the way, I was at the major that Rose won.
Yeah,
did you hear that?
I heard that, but I want to know, did anybody take the under? Did anybody, a high roller, take the under of the Pelicans 76er game last night, Thomas?
No, we did not have any big bets on that one. We what was the big bet last night in the NBA? Oh, it was the Hornets game. That went flying over the total. We took it on the chin on that one.
And the Hornets, a straight-up winner in Milwaukee. They're playing very good ball, actually. You see it right there. They closed a 2.5-point favorite, 127-119 winner. Listen, Thomas, enjoy it. It's going to be a busy day for you over at the board. Got to stop by and say hi to the director of the Race and Sportsbook, Thomas Gable. Thank you, buddy.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thomas Gable, tremendous. A rare flex. He's not a flexer. By the way, did you see this? This is awesome. On the back of the T-shirt, it says, only bet as much as you're willing to win.
As you're willing to win. That's right.
That's the Lombardi line shirt.
That's exactly right.
I love that.
That's it. That's our shirt. Only bet as much as you're willing to win here today, Patrick.
More baseball with Michael Lombardi and Josh Applebaum.
Mickelson's on 8-2. Wow.
Get him. Baseball players, they don't get style points for home runs, but you do. New BetMGM customers can turn $1 into $100 when someone goes yard during a game. Sign up for BetMGM in the app. VSIN100 is the code. And if you place a $1 wager, money line today, Nationals, Dodgers, you get $100 if either team hits a home run. That's going to happen. It's paid for in free bets. Must be 21 years or older. Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia. Got a gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, Virginia. 1-800-270-7117. For help in Michigan, 1-800-GAMBLER, Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Call or text Redline in Tennessee, 800-889-9789. We welcome you back. What happened? Did Phil make the putt, Michael Lombardi?
No, I haven't got it yet there. You know, he's on 8. He's lining it up right now. It's a long one. It's about a 45-footer, I would say.
Lefty.
Don't know the break of the putt. Yeah, lefty. I mean, look, the only reason I bring Phil up is because is this going to give us a kind of a glimpse into what lies ahead? And he's playing very well, and so maybe there is a 66 out there that somebody can shoot. Maybe there is a 65, 67. And if that's the case, then I think Brady Cannon's number of it being Wes Reynolds' number of it being a 10 or 11 might not look as good, which I think is still true. So we'll see. And again, weather's going to play a huge factor in this.
And Phil, an important name to bring up as well, because remember, it took him a while to get over the hump at Augusta. This is generally a course that you win if you have experience. Fuzzy Zeller, the last to do it, his first attempt in 79, also plays
didn't
well.
He do it? And it took overtime. Didn't Fuzzy have to win it at overtime too, right? Didn't he have to go to sudden
death? He did have to go to extra. Now, Harmon, I bring Phil up again, Michael, because Harmon's a lefty as well. Weir's won it. Bubba's won it twice. Obviously, Phil, this course plays well to a lefty, and Harmon is just that.
And I thought Harmon played with great discipline. And, you know, Phil's putt looking, oh, wow, what a great putt he just had. And now it's going to be a birdie, but I mean, he just missed it. It was perfectly timed, and his putt came off the putter perfectly. I mean,
you notice he looks skinny, by the way.
Really good.
You notice he lost weight.
He really does. Yeah, he does. He's kept it off. He's gotten rid of the sunglasses, which I think helps too.
I think that helps.
He didn't
everybody.
Get the sunglasses. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But you're wearing a hat with the sunglasses. I didn't get that. You know, I mean, I get it if you're in witness protection, but I don't get it if you're on the golf course.
Yeah,
but anyway, look, he's, you know, he bogeyed the hole before, so he's plus one. You know, he bounced back with the birdie here, so he's playing well. I mean, it's not perfect, but I think this is an indication of perhaps what's ahead for us.
Josh Applebaum ahead for us here on the Lombardi Line, host of Market Insights. Are you jelly, bro? Check out the gear.
I love it. We had to call someone up at the South Point, say, check Patrick Maher's cubby hole. He's got a bunch of gear
obviously.
Waiting for him.
He didn't check all the love letters he's getting either. You know, obviously he's not checking his mail at VSiN.
Yes.
God only knows what's in there. Yes. Oh,
yes. Well, 100% the love letters. I can't wait to pick those up.
Yeah.
Old school. Let's Josh. Yeah. We were just talking a little golf. You do have an update, I believe, NBA wise. Is that where you want to start?
Yeah, got an NBA update. And also, any of you who, like me, bet on the Masters winner, country of origin, USA, Michael, I'm feeling a little bit better. Doesn't look like the UN there in the top five. I got Spieth, Zalatoris, and Harmon, three Americans in the top three. So if you bet that prop, I need Rose to kind of to lose it here late. That's what I'm banking on.
Yeah, get his crown ass out the way. Sorry, bad language. Sorry, go ahead. I forgot it was a family show. Go ahead, Josh.
Patrick, you'll like this one because you're a famous son from the state of Michigan, from Detroit.
Thanks,
here.
Man.
So
appreciate it.
What do you think about your Pistons here today, guys? Because this is interesting, Patrick. This is a stat that's going to blow your mind a little bit. But big win here. And, yeah, now they're going up against the Blazers, who are resting Nurkic, their big man here tonight. What I like about this one, guys, on the surface, it's like lay the wood with the Blazers. They got a way better record. Pistons are struggling. You know, Jeremy Grant isn't in today. He looks like he's going to be doubtful again. They're going for a top pick here, Patrick. But what I like is that a lot of these books open at 12. They're down to 11.5. And Detroit, sneaky. They're 3-2 their last five. Beat Sacramento as an 8-point dog. Portland's lost 3 of 4. A lot of some sharp money on them recently has not come through. Portland's been a little bit of a disappointment here lately. But you have this move toward the Pistons as a late night game. But what I like about Detroit here is we joke about the Bulls as a dog. Detroit as a dog, 26-21 ATS, 55%. But here's the kicker. When they're getting a bunch of points, 5 points or more, I had to double check this stat, guys. Detroit as a dog getting 5 or more, 23-9 ATS, 72%. So they've really been doing well when kind of the public dismisses them, thinks they're terrible, can't possibly keep it close. But yet this line is in their favor and the line is kind of moving toward them. So, Michael, what do you think? Are we kind of undervaluing the Pistons here, or is it Dame Lillard at home? You know, they'll win by double digits.
All right. So let's look at it. Right. The Pistons are 9-3 against the spread in the last 12 road games, you know, and I know Jeremy Grant's not going to play tonight, but Corey Joseph stepped up and he really was the unlikely hero. He had 24 points and 7 assists the other night against the Kings. Lillard is in a slump. I mean, Damon Lillard hasn't been the same player. He scored 16, 11 and 23 points in 2 losses and just 1 win. So he hasn't played to his best. The Blazers are, however, they are 10-2 in the last 12 meetings in the Moda Center there with against the Pistons, have covered 3 times in the last 5 meetings in Portland. So all lines up. I mean, that's all I would say. I think the Pistons, you know, they've won 4 of their last 7 games. They're playing better. They're playing for nothing, but at least they're playing better.
Numbers, put some respect on the Pistons' name. The numbers do point to the Pistons here. The Portland Trailblazers 10-5 straight up their last 15 at home, Michael and Josh. However, 3-6 ATS their last 9 at home. So again, Michael just gave you those tremendous stats for the Pistons' ATS on the road. Portland not so hot ATS at home lately. And you mentioned he just nailed it with Lillard. He is in a slump. And they caught the Jazz in a perfect spot the other night and got blown out in that second half, Josh.
Yeah, they did, Patrick. And I think the other part I didn't talk about was they haven't get any production from their bench, right? No players have scored more than 8 points off their bench. And Carmelo just had 2 from 8 from the field, and he finished with 7 points. So, you know, when Lillard doesn't carry him, and you run the risk here as a bettor that this guy's going to turn it on because he can get hot, hot, hot quickly. But when he's not carrying them, then all of a sudden, where do they get points from? And if it's not their bench and they're not getting production from their bench, it does line up like the Pistons have a great opportunity here.
It's Lillard for the Trailblazers and Mitchell for the Jazz. If you're talking MVP, I don't know how two players could be more respectively important. Mitchell's gone, the Jazz are gone. If Lillard, for some reason, that just made me think of him. Josh, you have a comment on betting the NBA as far as injuries.
Yeah, and I'll team Michael up for this one. This is Michael's soapbox, and I'm right there with him.
Off.
So, Michael, get ready. I'm gonna just prepare yourself. Michael's about to go off, but this is important, guys. The NBA is really difficult to bet on because of injuries and guys being questionable and you not knowing who's in or who's out. So, perfect example from last night. If you can really isolate this and have all of your accounts open, and once you get on Twitter and get confirmation that guys are out, and if you can jump on these lines immediately, to me, that's where I think some money is made in the NBA. Like, perfect example yesterday with that Charlotte game against the Bucks. The Bucks were -8.5. Giannis was doubtful. It immediately got down to 7. Then you had Middleton out. You had Holiday out. That line completely flipped, like a 10-point move all the way to the Hornets, like -2.5, -3. So here's the key. You know, I jumped on the Hornets here, seeing that Giannis was out, saying, hey, I'll take a shot here. I was surprised. And a lot of these books will take down the numbers when these injuries come out. So I jumped on Hornets +7. Boom, this line continues to move. So again, you don't want to be too late to the party, but this is the key, jumping on these numbers before they move. Two of them today, Michael, would be your guy Embiid. He's questionable here. You look at the Sixers, they're minus
11. He's not 11. Playing. He's yeah, not playing. So, he's not going to play.
And does this thing fall, Michael, -11 at the Thunder, yeah, if you know Embiid's out, down to -8, something like that. Also, Bradley Beal. You know, Bradley Beal's questionable today. You're looking at the Wizards at the Suns. That's -12 Suns right now. If Beal's out, does that go to -15? So the NBA, Michael, I'll give it to you, but it's got to know who's in and who's out. Monitor Twitter. Jump on these lines quick. And do not bet these games too early in the day. Everything could cap, could just go to shreds there late.
And look no further than the Barclays Center in Brooklyn to really highlight your point. You know, after 4 games and a 7-game road trip, the Lakers are 2-2 without LeBron. We know LeBron's not going to play Anthony Davis. They played well enough in Miami. They hung around. They lost by 6. And Caldwell Pope was unbelievable. He had 28 points. He had 6 3-pointers. And my man, Andre Drummond, without slippers and a good toe. Thank you, JVT. He comes back and has 15-12. So, you know, but they're in fifth place. Now we get the Brooklyn. Rat Pack, right? You know, we think Kevin's going to play. 17 points, didn't miss a shot, right? In only 18 minutes, and they blew out the Pelicans 139-111, which the Sixers couldn't beat, even though they were playing with their MVP. That's a whole other conversation. How about LaMarcus Aldridge adding 22 points the other night? I mean, think about that. So where are you on this game? The line's 10.5. Are you betting this one? And would you play the under in this game? Because you know the Lakers can't score. You think Caldwell Pope's going to put another 28 up there? I don't.
I'm with you, Michael. We do know that the Nets are a really good over team, but you are right. The little bit of under money has come in on this one. Lakers, Nets, you know, this line open. Some shops are like 223.5, 224. It's down to 222. This is the thing you get in with these totals. You know that there's some respected money under, but if it keeps dropping, you're losing value at this point. Of course, this one, you know, 8:30 game. This, all these NBA games, wait until later in the day. But I think if you get Durant in here, you know, and you have obviously Harden's out, but Durant, Kyrie, was intriguing to me, Michael, is some of these shops are like 11.5 down to 10.5, but now we're starting to see it maybe come back the other way. So the Nets would have a one-day rest advantage. I'd be looking at leaning Nets if these guys are in, but of course we want to know injury report later in the day.
Hey, quickly, Atlanta's go ahead, Michael.
I think I take the Nets here. I think I lay the points. I mean, right. I think the Nets will play because it's the Lakers and they want to show dominance.
Lay the 10.5. No, that's okay. Atlanta's getting bet at home, yet the number's moving to the Phillies. I smell a spot to bet here, Josh.
You know, we couldn't wrap up a Lombardi line show without another
baseball.
I wanted to talk about it tonight.
Michael, do you want to do it?
I mean, who's got the? No. You could start off. I'll comment.
Hey, by the way,
I mean,
it's not Michael. It's Mr. Marlin.
I mean, who's got the peanuts? I want to talk about baseball. Of course, I want to talk about baseball.
Give me a play in 30 seconds, Josh. Go, Phillies, Braves.
Michael's our Babe Ruth. I'm looking at Phillies here. Divisional dog on the road, bounce back spot. You've seen this line open, -140 Braves. The thing is dropping as we speak. Phillies, awful loss. Division dog on the road. I'm looking at the Phils, little plus money, guys.
Josh
Zach Eflin, great first outing. First outing, you're going against him. He had a great first outing. They're ready to give this cup here to the Phillies. Philadelphia loves the Phillies.
Hey, Josh, enjoy the golf. Michael, enjoy the baseball. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm going back to study right now.
Oh, I know you are.
I'll be back.
It's basically Nolan Ryan over there.